I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and this is The Takeaway. We turn now to Nicaragua, where the political crisis continues to worsen ahead of November's presidential election. Opposition leaders have been attempting to get on the slate to challenge President Daniel Ortega. But in the past month, Ortega's government has arrested four presidential candidates.
Si están viendo este video es porque he sido incomunicado o capturado.
That's Juan Sebastián Chamorro, one of the four presidential pre-candidates who was arrested earlier this month. In the video, he's saying that if we are watching this video, it is because he has been captured.
A mi querida familia, les digo que no se preocupen, que voy a estar bien. Estoy preparado espiritualmente, mentalmente y físicamente para lo que viene.
He's addressing his family, telling them not to worry, that he will be okay, that he was spiritually, mentally, and physically prepared for what may come.
We haven't seen our brother for 6 days now. We haven't been able to see him nor his lawyers, so we're concerned.
That's Ana Maria Chamorro, Juan Sebastián's sister. We spoke on Monday, and she described the events leading up to his arrest.
He had a summons in the prosecution's office on June 9th at 8:30 in the morning. And he knew that he was going to be arrested because the same thing happened to another candidate. But the night before, at 7:15, he was home with his wife. And 40 cops came into his house, very aggressive. They took him. We didn't know where they were taking him. And they spent about 4 hours searching his house with my sister-in-law in it, so we didn't know anything about her for 4 hours.
Ana Maria has not been able to contact her brother since his arrest.
We go every day to a detention center to bring him food. For the last 3 days, they told us that he didn't need any food anymore, so they just let us leave water for him. We're going to keep going, insisting on seeing him, and until I see him, I'll be okay.
Since 2018, after the Ortega administration began implementing austerity measures, mass protests have taken hold of Nicaragua. And Ana Maria and her family have seen President Ortega only escalate his response to the movement in opposition to him.
Well, lately, it's not normal. Since 2018, things have changed, and there's a lot of repression. You cannot go out on the street with the Nicaraguan flag. If you do, you go to jail. So it's pretty bad.
Cristiana Chamorro Barrios is also a pre-candidate for the presidency and was recently placed under house arrest. Cristiana, Ana Maria, and Juan Sebastián come from a well-known family in Nicaragua. Tensions between Ortega and the Chamorros are decades old. Back in 1990, after 6 years of Ortega's first term, Violeta Chamorro defeated him in an election.
I think it's something in our blood. It's been in the history of Nicaragua for more than 100 years. So when my brother took the decision, it's because he wants his country to be free and to have all the opportunities that we should have, you know, to be free.
Speaking out about the situation is a risk for Ana Maria and her relatives. Already 12 people opposing Ortega have been arrested this month.
I'm not fearful for me, but there's always a possibility, you know, of being arrested. So that's the chance I'm willing to take to let the world know about the violations that have been made to my brother.
And as Ana Maria and I were speaking, she made an appeal.
I believe that we can use our social medias to put all over the world that this is going on. So there's a lot of pressure, you know, for them to let them see us.
Here to help us understand the context of this crisis is Anatoly Kormanayev, who is Mexico and Central American correspondent for the New York Times. Anatoly, thank you so much for being here.
Pleasure to be here.
I'd like to step back for just a moment. So Nicaragua's President Daniel Ortega has been in power since 2007. What has the last decade and a half been like for Nicaragua under his administration?
Since he came back to power as a democratic leader, we've seen a gradual erosion of political rights, of civil rights. But it also happened in the context of a relatively free economy. Nicaragua is quite different from other authoritarian regimes in Latin America, like Cuba or Venezuela. in that private sector has a leading role in the economy. It's a pretty open economy. It's very much export oriented. So it was a pretty strange combination of a repressive governments, repressive, you know, political rights with pretty open economic rights. Since 2018, this has taken a major turn for the worse. There has been a series of protests that have been brutally repressed, more than 300 people killed. And in the last 2 weeks, we've seen repression gone even a step further, with the government going after the remaining dissident leaders in the country.
And so what led to those 2018 austerity measures that sort of sparked these widespread demonstrations?
Well, like many historical events, it became with something quite minor. People came out on the streets to protest a reduction in social security. There was a small tweak in the way welfare payments were calculated. People came out on the streets, and it quickly grew into general discontent of the government's general desire for something else. You know, for Ortega to go. You know, he's been in power for almost a decade, more than a decade at the time. And it became this massive call for a change.
In the intervening years since he came back to power, has it been normal practice to arrest those who are considering running against him?
Well, we have to remember that Ortega didn't come out of nowhere. He, of course, was one of the leaders of a Sandinista revolutionary movement that ousted dictator Somoza in 79. And Ortega, together with other revolutionary leaders, ruled Nicaragua during the 80s. And of course, you know, this was a period of Cold War. It was a period of civil war. The civil rights were also pretty limited. You know, it was a very austere authoritarian government. So he came back to power as a democratic leader. He won in democratic elections in 2007 already with that mindset. So it was never really a free and open place, but it's certainly been gradually taking a turn for worse as his time and power went on.
So you've given us a bit of that history. Can you help the U.S. audience to also understand the ways that the United States was involved in some of that history?
Well, of course, you know, during the 80s, you had a civil war against U.S.-backed Contras, right-wing paramilitaries, of course. So yes, I mean, there's, of course, a history of U.S. involvement in the region, a history of Soviet Union's involvement in the region, which has destabilized the country for decades, and we are living in many ways the consequences of the time. You know, a lot of the players on the stage today are the same. Ortega, of course, came from a period, the Chamorro family that has been repressed at the moment. They were supporters of a revolution. You know, many of the Chamorros played a part in a revolutionary junta with Ortega in the 80s. And of course, Violeta Chamorro, a relative of Juan Sebastián, she beat Ortega in democratic elections in 1990. A lot of the players, you know, in the drama that's unfolding today, go back to the Cold War era, where the U.S. played a major role.
And before our conversation started, we just heard from the sister of Juan Sebastián Chamorro. And I'm wondering if you have heard anything on the ground, if you know details surrounding his arrest or his current condition.
It was part of a larger wave of arrests in Nicaragua. As you mentioned, more than 12 people have been arrested since. The details of their conditions are scarce. My understanding is that most of them are held incommunicado. Most of them have not been able to see a lawyer. Some have been able to see maybe a relative, but again, it depends on a case by case basis. They don't have cell phones. They don't have connections with the outside world. They haven't been brought to court. They haven't, you know, a lot of them have not even been formally charged. Some claim to have been abused during their arrest, beaten, their relatives threatened. So, you know, it's an extremely serious situation that threatens what's basically left of independent thoughts in Nicaragua.
So what you're describing here, not only with the detention, the harassment, potentially the violence against these candidates, but the much more widespread brutal crackdown that you've described, it feels to me like human rights violations. And yet we just heard Vice President Harris in Central America telling people, don't come. How is the Nicaraguan crisis likely to either increase the number of migrants fleeing Central America or ultimately draw the U.S. into needing to address this?
I think this is a major dilemma for the U.S. government at the moment. We can say that this is the first democratic crisis in Latin America for the Biden administration, the first one that happened on this watch, and they have pretty bad options in how to respond to it. As you mentioned, the administration is trying to make democracy a priority in Central America, but they're also extremely concerned about migration. So far, sanctions against the latest round of crackdown have been limited to just personal sanctions against some Ortega officials, which we don't really care about too much at this stage. And the administration has shied away from economic sanctions, from basically punishing Ortega's economy, precisely because it could lead to a rise in migrants. If the economic situation becomes particularly dire in Nicaragua, we could see Nicaraguans joining, Guatemalans, Hondurans, Salvadorians fleeing their countries and heading to the US border. And it's precisely what the Biden administration is trying to avoid. Does have pretty bad options in how it can respond to this crisis.
Anatoly Kormanayev is Mexico and Central American correspondent for the New York Times. Anatoly, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.